It's always interesting why stuff that was in the original Bible that we would call the Catholic Bible, because that's what it was, why isn't it there today? Because over the years, they made about 30,000 changes that were significant. And I'm not talking about just punctuation, because this really didn't exist, but I'm talking like changes, like making Mary into a prostitute, for example, things like that. And these changes reshaped the views so they could get rid of all of the non-Orthodox people and call them evil names like Gnostics or heretics or something like that, right?
Now, this is really cool, though. I want to take a moment, and gold recently hit an all-time high and has taken a fresh retreat. So many experts are looking at $2,500 in the near future. Now, I'm not an expert, and there's obviously never any guarantees. But if you look at the information presented, I wanted to share something with you real quick. So, and then we're going to get back to the podcast. Gold prices are predicted to exceed $2,500 an ounce in 2024 with a potential upside of more than 20%. Gold prices are near record highs again. They may keep climbing for the next 10 years. That's what I'm talking about. Read all about it, Barron's. Then silver, hello, is 2024 the year for silver? JP Morgan's silver forecast for 2024, which highlights gold and silver as their top metals for the year and calls for silver to break the $30 mark. Do yourselves a favor. Go to leakprojectgold.com. Get a free ebook, How to Get Out of the Rat Race. Get yourself this free coin that you see behind me. This is a American Virtue 3-ounce silver coin. Will be gifted to you at no additional cost. If you qualify, find out how. 1-877-646-5347. And let's get back to the podcast, shall we? Hey, everybody. Rex Baer, Leak Project. How the heck are you? Beautiful day today out here in Southern Colorado. And we have one of my favorite guests, awesome human being, Dr. Kevin Hogan is with us today. He's a regular on Leak Project, but far from regular. Dr. Kevin Hogan needs no introduction, but for those that haven't heard of Kevin, you're probably living on a rock somewhere without internet, first of all. But he's a best-selling author, public speaker, scholar, and at the cutting edge of psychology, motivation, neurolinguistic programming, persuasion. And for the past several years, Kevin has done deep dives into the mysteries of the Bible, the real Bible, Jesus, Mary, and the major players from about 2,000 years ago in the time of Jesus. Was Jesus real? Well, you're definitely going to want to listen to more of this and go back and listen to our previous podcasts if you haven't heard them, because that will definitely answer your question. We're going to answer many more questions today. So buckle up, Buttercup. You want to keep your hands and feet in the ride at all times for this one. Kevin, it is great to see you. How the heck are you?
I'm good. It's great to be with you today. And I love the backdrop for today's experience. Nothing like putting various, you know, evil symbols, especially when we're going to talk about the Bible. So let's go for it. I love it. Nice to see you. How are you doing, by the way?
Oh, man. Amazing. Thank you so much. It's a fantastic day. Super happy to be here. Super happy to speak with you. And thank you for sending me the rough draft of the Unholy Trinity. I had a tough time putting it down before this interview. Otherwise, I'd still be reading it. It's good, folks. And we've talked a lot about it in these previous podcasts. So when is that? When do you think that's coming out?
I think, let's see, let me be realistic here. As you get to the end, you'll notice that the manuscript I sent you, which is about 100,000 words, which is about 450 pages.
Very small font.
They want you to keep it out of 600. So I'm right now up to the crucifixion at the end of what I sent you. And this is a really delicate issue that has to be dealt with even in a fiction book elegantly. And so after the crucifixion, there's still a big story. And to answer your question is then it'll take about 150 more pages, which is about 3 months, and then it'll take 3 months on an edit. So because you got to edit my work, man. Wow. I feel for you if you're reading an unedited copy.
I can handle it.
Okay. But I'm thinking May 1.
That'd be a great time around May. Absolutely.
Should be. Yeah, I think that's right. And I think it's something that nobody's ever done before, and that's cool. It's been a ride writing this book. I've never gotten so intensely excited about like tearing up half of my book, literally, sort of metaphorically, right? Because it's all in digital. But like just cutting stuff out and going, that didn't happen, you know? Finding out what did happen. And actually, like, how the heck would you find this out? You got to go find sources. And it's like, I wanted to write the right book, like the book that would be closest to the accurate, which is one of the things I want to talk about today, too, is Jesus' father. So, you know what? Guys, I always have a pen and paper. Hang on, I got to write that down. Because somebody thought that I said guaranteed it was somebody, and that's not true. So anyhow, so May 1st.
Perfect. Okay. And just to let people know also, the title of today's podcast, Covert Christianity Unveiled, Startling Revelations of Manipulation and Cover-Ups, and Leak Project Viewers Want Answers About the Real Bible. So you're about to get them, folks. And where do we start? Take it away, Kevin.
Well, there's first of all, the we've talked now for about five or six podcasts, and we've been sort of like, we sort of have bounced around a little, which by the way is the best way to learn. We know that if you interrupt along the way and you go somewhere else, people actually drop that. A space is created in memory and you get another one and it drops in, another one drops in, whereas these big long memories are really tough to fit in. So unlike a class at school, which is 2 hours of Matthew 7, for example, We take a story and we go over here. And then people go, you know, I know about that actually. And they actually remember stuff. So this is actually a very helpful, it's not always simple, but it's helpful to do interviews the way that you do and to share data the same way is a good idea too. So I think we start, I sent over maybe a grand total of 8 slides today. And I want to just go back and look at a few of the things that we've talked about and put them in a sequence, because a lot of people like sequential information. And I thought, God, you know, it would be great if we can get people to know like what happened when, and just in order, and really not go too deep, but spend a little time with just what happened when. And so we can see, oh, this is how this all happened. And this is how it happened. Time frame. Okay. What do we got there? That's the Nakamati Scrolls. We'll come back there later on, I think.
Okay. Did you want me to start on the slideshow, like on a location?
Yeah. Go to number 5, I think. We can try that.
Okay.
Okay. And so first of all, it would be really remiss to talk about anything in the Hebrew Bible, which would be the Old Testament, right? It would be remiss to, without mentioning first that Gilgamesh was written about 1,000 years before the Bible was, and the Epic of Gilgamesh, and the Enuma Elish, which is sort of the Babylonian story, same basic concept, maybe 1,000 years later, and 900 BC is before anything that we have in the Old Testament. So these things influenced the Bible. Period. They were the huge influences, and it's not like the Jews made all this stuff up out of thin air. They captured information from other cultures, and they wrote about it as time went on. Around 550 to 500 BC, there was a temple built in Elephantine, Egypt. I've gone back and forth through studies, really hardcore scholarship and archaeology, and I think maybe my original guess of 400 was wrong about Jerusalem. Maybe it was closer to 500 that it was the Jerusalem temple was built. It is a monstrous temple. Even the old temple was. But the new one that they built from King Herod is just awesomely huge. It's just an amazing structure. I mentioned the next little thing here. Why would we mention Enoch? Because he wasn't even in our Old Testament. But the thing is that he was in the Old Testaments that mattered, which is the scrolls and the codexes. This would have been a scroll form written in Aramaic. And Enoch is the oldest document that we have out of all of the Old Testament documents, out of everything. There's nothing that we have. Now, people can say, oh, I have a document, and it goes back 1,000 years. No, you don't. They have something that may have been copied to today, or it may be the 350 or 200 BC or whatever, you know, but you can only speculate when something was written if you don't have a copy of it. I can show you copies of books that I started 10 years ago, but if I give you today's version, you'll say, oh, well, I've got the book. Well, actually, the very first version of the book is really, really different than the one that I have today. Okay, so what I sent you the other day was the copy of the most recent copy of my book, but that's gone through about 25 or 30 renditions. And if you read the first one compared to what it is now, it's really different. So similarly, and the same exact thing happens with the Bible, all the books that are in the Bible or in extra biblical literature, which Jesus considered to be the Bible. Jesus considered all of these things to be the Bible. Jesus considered Enoch to be part of his Bible because he talked about it. He read from it. So did, and by the way, if you like the Apostle Paul, he cites Enoch more than anybody, except for maybe word for word, maybe John in Revelation. But the point is that this is the oldest document that we have that we would call Jewish literature is Enoch. And there's nothing older. So starting about 350 BC, it was there. But the thing is, it caused a lot of problems for churches, for the Jewish religion. And so people sort of put it over here to the side, and they're like, oh, you know, Enoch's got some challenges to it. But the Catholic Church, even though they didn't put it in their Bible, they used it for ideas like limbo and purgatory and things like that. That's where these things came from. You might think, oh, well, they made it up out of thin air because there's nowhere else it's talked about. Actually, it was the concepts were out of Enoch. So it's kind of interesting to see how it all plays out. So everything since Enoch was since 350 BC that we have. We have two archaeological finds that are pretty cool. One of them is a little amulet, and it has a little, it was just found like 10 years ago, maybe 20 years ago. And it's just a necklace, and it's from about 8th century, which is 700s BC. And it's got some Hebrew writing. And I believe on this one, on the amulet, is part of the Irish blessing. I think it's "May the Lord shine his face upon you" or something like that. And it's an interesting coincidence because it was dated by legit scholars. And so that was pretty amazing. I would not have guessed that they would have found this. And then recently, like 2 years ago, it was found, this little stone this big, and it has the word Yahweh on it. I mean, it's got his name, YHWH, which is really rare, by the way, because you don't put Yahweh's name, even when you look at the literature, that the oldest copies of the Bible that we have are all from Qumran. They're all from the Dead Sea. There's nothing even close anywhere else. And a lot of the times they don't even write the Tetragrammaton at all. Like they just leave it out of there. Like it's just hinted at with little ticks.
Isn't it because it's such a holy name that a lot of people wouldn't write it down intentionally?
Well, right. This is the deal, is that in the rules, in the using slang for the house here, but in Hogan rules, which is the Ten Commandments plus the other 600 rules, the rules are really important. And the very first commandment is, thou shalt not have, out of the King James, thou shalt not have any other gods before me. Okay. And the next one, and by the way, these are completely different than what's in Deuteronomy. So don't ever read Deuteronomy versus Exodus, because then you get to two different things and you're like, oh, my Bible conflicts with each other. But I use the Exodus rules. So Exodus, and then the next one is thou shalt not have, take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, right? Okay, that's the whole deal right there. And so, and as this little section of the, what we call the first four rules are all about God, and the last six are about people. And so the next, one of the other rules there in the top four was, you won't make unto thee any graven image of anything that's in heaven above or earth beneath. And so this always ticks off, like, you know, because a lot of people will say, well, you know, your religion can't be possibly correct or real because there's no archaeological finds. Well, of course, this is totally true. Why? Because in their religion, they weren't allowed to do that. You didn't make a picture of the sun god. You didn't make a picture of the devils out there and Belial and all these guys. You didn't do any of that stuff. And so they'll never find anything like that. And if they do, it's a fraud. Okay, it's not real because it wasn't done by a Jew then. There's no way that's Israel in the last 1,000 years or 3,000 years. Let's go with 3,000 years. It's just not possible. So that goes back to about 1,000 BC, 900 for this other little stone. Pretty cool. But aside from that, there's really no scripture that's written before Enoch, which brought a problem to.
Well, go ahead. I'm sorry. One more quick question. The amulet that was discovered, since that's the case, would you say that it probably wasn't from a Jewish person then that engraved it? And why would it be so? Why would they engrave it?
Well, I think, and this isn't, I think. I don't think the Jews certainly didn't have an issue with handwriting, okay? But they, except for scribes and priests, I mean, really, they were an illiterate culture even through the time of Jesus. The non-Hellenized Jews, so before this, the birth of Christ time period, plus or minus 100 years, the Jews didn't really read their own language. They spoke it fine, but not much in the way of writing, very little in the way of writing. And in fact, when scholars try to argue that the Dead Sea Scrolls aren't the oldest Bible, I mean, this is funny, because it's like they date paleographically, radiocarbon. I don't care which one you don't like. The other one works too, and they're all within 50 to 100 years, and they all date back before Jesus, which is 1,000 years earlier than what we have with anything the church has. 1,000 years. And so when Jesus grabbed a scroll, he took one of those scrolls that we've shown so many times, and he would literally open it to the book of Isaiah. He would have to get this, by the way, from old friends, right? And the only two places that they stored scrolls was at Qumran and Jerusalem, okay? They were at the Jerusalem temple. We know that. And we know that Qumran had them. Nobody else had scrolls. There's no data anywhere, and none have ever been found anywhere except for these two locations. So we know Jesus got his stuff here. He opens Isaiah's scroll. He reads that, and he sits down. What I liked about Jesus, he wasn't like you and me. He talked for 4 minutes, and he was done. The guy was like a short speaker. He was like, this is it. And then they'd say, but Master, what does that mean? It's like, oh, you don't know. Well, you know, you're not going to make it then. Literally, he would say that, like, that the kingdom of God is for those who know, and I've given the information to. And they're like, oh, kind of, oh, he was such a guy. 270 BC, this guy Ptolemy the ruler up in Philadelphia. Now, by the way, this is not Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We'll show you on a map later on where this Philadelphia is. You know, but Ptolemy of Philadelphia demands the Torah to be written because Greece is now running the show here, and it's like, we don't even know what these people believe. And in order to know what people believe, you have to get to their religion because the religion is where the rules are made, right? It's like, you know, the priests that wrote the Hebrew Bible, if you want to take the argument of conservative Christians, it goes far back in that the scribes would have copied those documents. Well, Ptolemy in 270 BC didn't give a rip about what supposedly happened. He wanted to see copies. They didn't have any copies. Okay, the Jews did not have copies of their own documents. So, but nevertheless, the claim is that, oh, did we talk about this once before? Ptolemy, he demands that they bring their scrolls, but they don't have any. So they go to Alexandria. This is Egypt, and you'll find out everything happens in Egypt. And not a lot elsewhere early on in the Bible days. But they basically went into the Alexandrian library, and they went into 70 Jews, go into 70 rooms. It sounds like an old joke from the 1950s, but it's not. 70 Jews go into 70 rooms, and their instruction is to write their Torah, which is the law. What are the rules? Everybody should know the rules. They're not that well. There are a lot of them. But it's Genesis through Deuteronomy, through the end of Deuteronomy. It's actually a chunk. And so anyhow, so these 200 pages, they were told to go write the 200 pages. They all come out at the exact same time. That's what I love about this story. It's like magic. And so they come out at the exact same time, and they all, you know, show this codex, and they've all got it, and they all give it to the guys at Alexandria, the librarians. And the magical story basically ends like this. They were all exactly the same. You couldn't ask for a more cool story than that. So it's like you talk about the Christmas miracle or the Hanukkah miracle with the Maccabees. That's nothing compared to how the Greeks got a copy of our documents because they just made 70 of them. So that, but anyway, but the reality probably was that, you know, they sent a delegation up from Jerusalem over to Alexandria, which would have been actually down. It's a couple days journey. It's not a terrible gig. In the wintertime, it's okay. Where there's water and not hot temperature. And so anyway, they went down there and they probably just sat down and then they probably, with the librarians, they probably put together the Greek at that time. Some scholars, and I really lean this way, and by the way, just because I lean does not mean I fall over, okay? I lean conservative on fiscal issues, and I lean Democrat on social issues, okay? That doesn't mean that I'm, like, you know, over here. I lean. And so I lean towards the idea that they sort of wrote the scriptures at the same time, which is why some of the Greek words that we have are actually Some of the Hebrew words that we have are actually Greek words that were interjected into the Hebrew Bible. That's a story. That's a really cool story, but all for a different time and for nerds only. So we'll talk about that sometime, but that's the nerds only edition. Around 300 to 100 BC. So you can see we're coming in time. The Jewish religion is growing. It's evolving. They're putting it together. They've actually got paperwork now. Okay. That's in the library. If you can get it at Alexandria Library, then everybody in the free world, well, the Roman Empire, which became that, but they'd all be able to see it. Then they could all read it. Everybody could read it. 300 to 100 BC, other temples are built in Egypt. Most people think the only temple ever built was in Jerusalem. Just wasn't true. There was lots of temples. And, without going into all seven of them, the most important one was at Elephantine, because it probably was the first, almost certainly, in Egypt, because it acted, the island of Elephantine acted as this buffer between the warring tribe factions from Ethiopia and Egypt. And Egypt paid the Jews, essentially, to go in the middle and fight off the Ethiopians. What's really ironic that we've never even mentioned on your podcast is that the most accurate and oldest final copy of the Bible that we have is in Ethiopia. The Ethiopian Bible actually is the most accurate and most valuable, and by the way, contains the Book of Enoch in it. Kind of cool. So, 200 BC, Qumran, as we've talked about in other shows, becomes super important. These are super conservative Jews that have come out of places like Jerusalem and Bethlehem and a lot of people from Galilee, for sure, around Lake Galilee, which would be from north to south, Gamala, where the Zealots were. I'll just do this for you. You got Gamala here, all the Zealots. Here's the lake, right? So Gamala's, not big enough. No, I don't have it with me. No, it's not big enough. It's okay. So the circle, it's like an oval. And Gamala is the Zealots at the top. And then you go this way and you got Capernaum, where Jesus lived. It's 5 miles away. And then you go here and you got Migdal. This is where Mary and Magdalene lived and where the first major, real cool synagogue was ever found. Probably dates to about 100 AD. But other people believe that it might have been there when Jesus was around. Some scholars believe there were synagogues that Jesus literally spoke in, as opposed to just like houses where most likely, I thought, and I still think, lean that way, that Jesus talked in people's homes, which is the most likely, or outside in an open-air Colosseum area type mountains and hills and stuff like that. But nevertheless, so you got Gamala, the Zealots, really important because they were important towards the crucifixion scene, and then Capernaum, and then Gamala, and then Tiberias, which was built for the king, super important place, all Hellenized Romans who had wanted to live on this beautiful lake, and they just built up a city right there, and everybody else hated them because the rest was all Jews. So anyhow, so that's this sort of this area here, and at the bottom, and then you go down towards the Dead Sea, which is only like a day's walk, maybe. It's about a day's walk down here to the Dead Sea. The Dead Sea is occupied by conservative Jews that were sick of what was going on in Jerusalem. Jerusalem was changing. All of a sudden, their holy city, which really meant a lot to them, was being splintered, and it was sort of divided. And if you look at the United States today and you see how it's so splintered, kind of 50-50, like, it's like that kind of happened in this period too in Israel, where they were like, we don't really like you guys all that much. And the conservatives all hung out in Galilee, where Jesus was born and lived, and the liberals were down in Jerusalem, and that's kind of how it was at the time there. And it turns out that the conservative Jews, the real manuscript find of all time, well, there were two, but this was one of them, the Dead Sea Scrolls, certainly the most important for the Jews by far. There's nothing that's more important than the Dead Sea Scrolls. And for Christians, there's nothing more important than to prove that your religion actually doesn't start in 1200 AD when you get your first copy of the Catholic Bible, right? It's like, no, this goes back to Jesus' time. And before, we actually have Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, and Enoch and Jubilees, and all the rest of them, okay? So we know, like, what Jesus taught from. And so when the Bible itself, the old King James, refers to the book of Jasher, for example, It's a real book, you know, and it's like, it was quoted. You know, you and I were talking about the Book of Kings before. You know, it's like, well, it was quoted. And there's other books like Jasher, like Jubilees, that are quoted in our in the Hebrew Bible, but they were never found until they were found at Qumran. And so actually we have like this interdependent proof now that this was right and this is correct and they were there. Kind of cool. So about 150 BC, Qumran foretells two messiahs. Okay, they're a small little sect. I mean, they're just a small group, maybe 1,000 to 4,000 people, which, by the way, is maybe 20% of the people that were in Lake Galilee, around Lake Galilee at the time. And so there's about 1,000, 2,000 something, about 4,000 total Essenes, and maybe 1,000 of them lived at Qumran on the Dead Sea. And they forecast two messiahs, as because the scriptures say that a messiah is going to come, and but not just one. It says there's two, and so basically you're expecting a priest of some kind, a very, very royal priest, which Jerusalem desperately needed, Israel desperately needed. It was taken over by Rome, and they needed a real messiah to be a real king and get rid of all the people that were currently there, like Herod, when Jesus was born, for example. One of the reasons why Herod had, you know, all the little two-year-olds in the area to be killed, right? So it shows you how important that second, the two messiahs really were going to be. So anyway, one comes. The teacher of righteousness did come, but the messiah that would become king, that would be the king and bring the kingdom of God to the world, he never came. And we think that Judas the Galilean was one, and we think that there were five others total, but Jesus was certainly one of them. And 150 BC to 68 AD, the Essenes, they copied copies of the manuscript. I talked to Kip Davis, Dr. Davis. I corresponded with him, I'm going to call it a month ago, because I had to know the answer to this question to be sure I was right on this, because, you know, I want to be as correct as I can. And I asked him, because he had actually done translations from Greek, from Hebrew into Greek or Hebrew into English. And I asked him, I said, when you're looking at when you're translating, when you're copying stuff like for English readers or whatever, I go, do you ever see the same handwriting? Because like this, nobody can see that or read it. Like, how the heck does he, like, this is what I write, right? Okay. I mean, it's chicken scratches. That's all it is. And nobody can read it. I can't read it. And I'm like, Isaiah and some other document which is not in the Bible. And he's like, yeah. He says, the same guy wrote this. And I'm like, that's cool. I go, that's really cool. I go, how many of the same guys are there? He says, we don't know because we haven't been through all of the scroll pieces yet. There are over 100,000 fragments left to go. Okay. So even though we found 700 scrolls and fragments from these 700 specific documents, there's a bucket load more to come. And that's why we keep, you know, discovered today. Well, it wasn't. It was discovered in 1960, but they're just getting to it now. Not a lot of people were schooled at my school, high school and college, to learn how to read a fragment from a Dead Sea Scroll, right? I mean, it wasn't all that common. So this concept of the Messiah was really important because the Jews considered their land to be very special, very holy, very unique unto themselves. And it was, but it was also taken over and over through history before Caesar came in. Pompey came in 63. And then in 48, about he installed Herod, made him, we're coming there. So I'll actually go in order. So 61 BC, Roman occupation of all Israel begins. I was looking at you up here in the corner. In 48 BC, Caesar burns the Library of Alexandria. Can you just imagine? All this work goes in. They have collected literally all of the works of the world into the library. And this moron, who, by the way, was born of a virgin, lived his life, and was voted by the Roman Senate, and he ascended to heaven in front of people, and he is there today, just so you know. And so it was true with his son Augustus, and the same was true with Tiberius, and the same was true with Hadrian and Trajan, and they weren't even nice guys. So Caesar burns the Library of Alexandria. A lot of people have written books about the fact that Jesus Christ and Julius Caesar were the same person. How do you like that for a potential great conspiracy podcast? I've never told anyone that, but it's common knowledge among scholars. And of course, the scholars go, oh no, don't bring that one up. That's a tough one. So all that for another day. And then the final act of the before Christ period was Herod becomes the king. And by the way, when I talk about stories about Jesus' time, which is about 60 years later, please understand that Herod was the king when Jesus was born and died the year after. Okay. And then his son became the king, and then his grandson became the next king. Okay. So there was more than one Herod, just like there's more than one Hogan and there's more than one bear. Okay. And so that's the old. And then we did that pretty quick. Let's try the New Testament, period. All right, so cool. So New Testament, you have this really interesting period where people are waiting for a Messiah. They want Jerusalem, even Jerusalem, which was pretty happy at the time. They were pretty comfortable, even though they're being ruled by the Romans. Things, frankly, were better for Jerusalem than they had been in about 500 years. Even having Roman rule. However, for the people in Galilee, it never was worse because they had a total nothing out there. It was like being poor in Alabama. It was all these wonderful people, seriously wonderful people, very conservative, very faithful to their beliefs, but they had nothing. They essentially had nothing. And so it was a time period where these people, especially up in the northern section, up in Galilee, they wanted the Messiah. The Dead Sea people wanted the Messiah. The people, they wanted the Messiah to come. And then whenever like somebody would come along and then fight the Romans, and then the Romans would kick the guy's butt. This happened numerous times, okay? So that's what's sort of going on in the first 100 years, 70 years down in Israel. In 30s AD, James, Peter, Philip, and all these guys, the people that were Jesus' disciples, basically. Disciples just means students, okay? Apostles doesn't mean anything fancy. It just means guys who are just, you know, told to go out and teach, basically. On the road teachers would be a very good way to deal with that. And the disciples were just students. And as you read all of the Gnostic scriptures, well, along with the Bible, you see clearly that they were students learning when Jesus was gone. Okay, they had a lot to learn. The guy who wrote Romans, Corinthians, Ephesians, Colossians, Philemon, these letters were Paul. If it was a terrorist, if you look sometime in April, Acts 9-11, Paul comes down Jerusalem, and he literally has Stephen, the apostle of Jesus, stoned, and then he goes up. Actually, the guys are stoning him, and then they say, "Can we kill him?" And then Paul goes, "Yeah, you can do that." So he obviously got military with him, right? He's not doing this all by his little self. But he disperses them into the other parts of Israel. And he basically broke up the church, if you want to call it a church. Church means ecclesia, that's word in Greek. And so this collection of people was like spread out. So for about 20 years, they were pretty spread out. And the Apostle Paul, if you will, was history and would have gone back home to Rome probably. In 50 AD, the Jews were expelled from Rome. That's just how it was. You weren't allowed to be there. You weren't allowed to be a Jew, which also meant Christian if you happened to believe in Jesus. It wasn't really a big thing yet. Nobody really thought, oh, I'm a Jesus follower. There were the Ebionites. There were a couple of small groups. The Zealots still believed, but very few others. Most people were still Jews with an appreciation that this guy came and that he was their Messiah. And some people, though, took his teachings and took them to heart and actually started to talk about them and record them later on. We'll talk about that. 68 AD, five-year Jewish war, Jewish-Roman war. It was genocide. Josephus, you can read it in Josephus. It's quite a nasty experience when the Romans came down and destroyed Israel. They destroyed both the Galilee region and also the Jerusalem region. Next thing that happens is about 50 years later, Rome comes down again into and destroys everybody else in what was called the Bar Kokhba revolts. But actually, this genocide was substantially worse than the first because people had thought it was safe to go back into Israel, and it wasn't. And the Romans came down in this period, 132 to 135, destroyed it again. The Ecclesia, however, Christians, the movement of this Jesus guy, you know, through the dispersion that had been happening for, 150 years into the Roman Empire, there were people all scattered all over the Roman Empire that were Jews. But now they were starting, some were now becoming Christians. They were sort of like, you know what? I really think he was important. I think he might have been a great man. He might have been like Plato or something like that. And that's how this whole thing started. Later, a couple hundred years later, he would get transferred into being like the savior, okay, the ultimate guy. That's a story too. The Valentinians were the first people to teach that around 120 AD. More of that for a different show. Around 100 AD, Christianity doesn't really get its birth in Jerusalem, doesn't get its birth in Israel, doesn't get its birth in Rome, that's for sure. So where was it given its birth? It was given its birth in Turkey, okay? I want to show everybody to number 7 here, and I want to give everybody a 21st century map of Europe, okay? What was the Roman Empire, right? So it was Spain and France and Switzerland, Italy, all the way over to Greece and all the way down to, you can see in the lower right-hand corner, Alexandria. That was the Roman Empire. But today, it's Egypt and the up by, you can see Istanbul, that's Turkey. Well, it turns out that Turkey, that whole thing off to the right, which we'll come to in just, yep, right there, that whole thing, and then to the left up to Bulgaria, and that's where one of the first 7 churches was, and then go down to North Macedonia, which Macedon is the way it's actually pronounced, North, it's right next door, there, and in Greece, this is where the church was really built, is right in this area, right here, lower right-hand corner, and that's it. Egypt becomes pretty irrelevant at this point. Jerusalem becomes irrelevant. Galilee becomes irrelevant. Nothing that I can think of was happening in any of the original places at this point. Now everything's happening in Turkey. Who told you that in Sunday school? No one, right? Because it's nobody wants to hear that story, but that's what happened. So how do we know? So before I go down there, I'm going to talk a little bit about a guy named we have the book of Mark, Matthew, Luke, and John, right? Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. There's 4 gospels, except for the one that was before the first published was actually Marcion. Now, let's go to the next. Oh, look up at Istanbul real quick up there in that corner up there. You see where Istanbul is? Okay. And then the lake right above that is called the Black Sea. It's this huge sea, and it goes right up against Bulgaria and Turkey. It's this beautiful area. And this is where Marcion of Sinope and the church actually start, is in Turkey. Let's go to the next shot, and I'll just show you where Marcion was born and where he went. So here you can see Bulgaria is over there. That's where one of the churches was. You can see Istanbul. That's Constantinople in 300. This is where the church was really born, was Istanbul. Okay, that's where Constantine did his thing. That city was dedicated to him and lasted that way a heck of a long time. That's later and for a different show, but that's how it is. And that little bridge is where from this maybe 100-mile thing from Bursa up to Istanbul over to Bulgaria, that's the last place that Paul would have, that's the furthest that his reaches took, that his journeys would have taken him, if indeed those journeys were Paul. Sometimes
Hey, real quick, I just noticed next to Bulgaria, the name of the area is Sofia.
Yes, by the way, that's their capital city, and a beautiful city with a huge history. And if it's interesting, I'll pull some photos from my trips there. I lived there for a while. I love Bulgaria. It's a great country. And
fabulous. That's the divine feminine, Sophia.
Yeah, boy, and they sure take that real there, too.
Do they? I mean, clearly they do.
Really?
And Sophia is also the mother of Yah the Baal. In the Gnostic text, like we were talking earlier.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Really? See, you are the genealogy guy of all the gods and of all things important. See, I just talk to humans. You deal with all this stuff up here. I had no idea. So one more time, say it. Sophia was the mother of...
And the Gnostic text, the secret book of John, which is very metaphorical, like we were talking off air, you know, it's, you read it and you're like, this is so far out there. Why am I even reading this? But if you realize that a lot of it's describing things in the heavens, like, outer space like the Zodiac, etc. But what's fascinating is the mother of Yah the Baoth, which is the chief archon that creates Adam and Eve in these texts. Sophia is the mother that creates Yah the, she makes Yah the Baoth without the divine masculine. So there's this like disconnect there.
Really?
Yeah. And it makes me think of King James, kind of how he's got, it seems like he had mom issues, right? Like seriously, I mean, I'm trying to say that in the nicest way possible, but it just, yeah.
All through history, through 2,000 years, women have always been given the short stick in religion for sure, right? I mean, you know, it's just true. I mean, every time a woman does something, you know, it's like she's just like erased. I mean, literally, people have been erased out of the Bible by the church and replaced. Do you remember, you know, one of the stories about Mary Magdalene, and I talk a lot about her only because I've been working on the book for so long. But she was called a prostitute. Okay. Well, this is worth telling. In one of the original codexes from 350 AD, about 300 years after Jesus, and about 300 years after Mary Magdalene, it's really easy to call somebody a prostitute when they're not there to answer the criticism. It wasn't in the original Gospels. It wasn't anywhere until the church in about 350, 400, they started adding it in, and they started putting in that, you know, she was this woman that was taken in adultery. No, she wasn't. It's in zero of the early manuscripts. And we have early copies of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John going back to about 175 or 200, maybe 225 at the latest. There's nothing before that except for maybe Thomas, which might go back to 80, but that's a sayings gospel. Mary's gospel goes back to about maybe, well, when was the manuscript written? The manuscript was probably written about 80, and it was maybe, it couldn't have been 70, so it had to be 80, but it was probably copy. Our copy is about 200, approximately 200. So anyhow, but the point is that the early pre-fathers, there were no popes until about 350 AD anyway, but the early church fathers really weren't church fathers. They just were sort of the head of this local group over here, and some of these groups started to agree with each other and work with the empire. I always feel like I'm talking about Star Wars, Rex, when we talk.
It is Star Wars. It's a documentary.
So anyway, they made Mary Magdalene into this prostitute. You know, it's like, and that really sucks because in the rules that we were talking about earlier, in the rules, if you're a prostitute or if you're somebody who's taken with a prostitute, you both go. You're done. Like, check out and get your ticket whichever way you're going, right? And it's like, so that wasn't okay. So the church basically turned her into a really bad person around 350. And then about 1950 or maybe in 1975, they started to say, no. We're taking that out of our – remember I told you in a pre-talk that we had that one of the codexes had all these changes in it? Well, one of the changes they did is they took that out. And so you don't find that – almost in no Bibles anymore that are printed nowadays, still based upon the ever-changing and ever-evolving Bible that's, quote, the official Bible, which is what's called the Nestle Aumann Bible from 1898, I want to say. But this is what all the Bibles are based on. And fortunately, they've taken the references in some of these things to people out that were just hits, like nasty hits on people. Or they would try to give people superior jobs, you know, like the church gave Peter as if he was the first pope. I mean, that would not be possible. The man was just cute. He's just a cute guy. But
Peter.
He wasn't a pope. He was such a Peter. I mean, oh my goodness. So, and we'll talk about Peter sometime. And I tease him because, I mean, Jesus teased him. Jesus had more fun with Peter than anybody. He gave him more hard times. And Jesus was such a real person. And this is what makes the Bible, I think, so interesting in these four original Gospels. And then when you look and you find this sort of like explanations for what Jesus said and did to Peter really, Peter was always the butt of the joke. Thomas, his brother, was really the one who, it wasn't that Thomas was a doubting Thomas. It was that Thomas was like, hey, if my brother is up on a cross. So
like, that was so weird. Do you know what just happened? You didn't mute yourself, but what you just said was totally muted.
Get out of here.
I swear that was the weirdest. I think Peter's saying, Peter's jumping in, man. He wouldn't even let you say that. That was, I will play it back for you. You watch it. That was the weirdest thing. And I'm like, I think Kevin muted himself. Sorry. I'm looking like, no, Kevin didn't mute himself, but somebody muted him. What did you just say? That was wild. Whoa.
Shoot, where was I? Oh, I hate this part where somebody says, what did you just say? Like, I remember. Thomas going back to, oh, Peter. So, okay. So, right. The disciples. So Peter was a good friend of Jesus, and Peter was probably a very, very good friend of Mary Magdalene. They lived essentially within minutes of each other. And so those are two facts. Okay. And so almost certainly they knew each other. Mary lived in Migdal, which is sort of like living in a really nice part of town. And Peter lived in Capernaum, which was the city and burnings and all that other stuff. Capernaum, well, it wasn't like that in Galilee. But nice people and two different worlds, but they almost certainly knew each other and were almost certainly good friends, and because they talked to each other like they're good friends, like they would rip on each other, you know, in conversations. And you can read those in the other gospels, the evil gospels. And so anyhow, so Peter, Jesus picked on Peter a lot, and he was really tough on Peter, just like a friend would be to a friend. You know, and Peter stayed loyal to Jesus, and Jesus stayed loyal to Peter. Meanwhile, one of the other disciples, Thomas, Didymus, in the Greek, the brother of Jesus, and we talked about him being a twin, and we'll talk about that in a future telecast, if you wish. But what we know about Thomas is that Thomas was pretty excited to see his brother after the crucifixion, and because Jesus was alive. And unlike what you read later in the Bible, where Jesus was like this mysterious spiritual entity, when he appeared to his disciples, he was just like this, like he was just a person. And in those days, when you were outside, you always wore clothes that made it, like Rex and I, we would not be, you couldn't distinguish one from the other based upon our clothing. And you wouldn't be able to see our faces. Everybody had a beard, pretty much. Because, like, why wouldn't you? If it's wintertime, you have to have one because it's cold. And in the summertime, you can only shave so much if you live in Galilee, right? Like, they had knives, but it would have taken days to shave, right? I mean, they weren't, like, 21st century razor blades. So maybe Herod, the Herods, you know, and the wealthy people in Tiberias might have had something sharper. But anyhow, so Thomas wanted to see the holes from the crucifixion. And a lot of scholars have said over the years, oh, you know, that probably isn't, you know, real. And I'm like, no, wait, that actually makes total sense. Thomas, who is his brother, wants to really see the truth and doesn't want to hear this BS that his brother, who he thought was up on the cross dying, and then all of a sudden he's alive. Like, tell him, I want to see it. And so Joshua, which was Jesus' real name, right? Yeshua, okay, right? So Jesus, Joshua, goes up to Thomas and says, check it out. I'm here. I'm back, man. Everything's cool. And so for the next 40 days to 500 in some of the Gospels, some 40 in others, Jesus hung out with them. And so people are always like, well, why didn't the Christian religion start, you know, in Galilee or in Jerusalem? It's because Jesus was out there teaching every day. He's off the cross. He's now back in Galilee, and he's doing exactly what he did before this magical ascension that he went into heaven on. And we'll do a show, if you want, on the crucifixion sometime and all that, because it's pretty interesting about what all of the variations. There's so many different stories about this that it's very intense, because people have opinions about it as if they were there. Okay. I have like 17 opinions, because there's 17 versions of this literally in all 17 gospels. Okay. That cover the resurrection and the crucifixion resurrection. So anyhow, Thomas was real happy because his bro was back. Mary was really happy because her companion was back, the one that Jesus loved the most, okay? That's how we know that, all right? So there's that part. All right, so Peter and Thomas, good people. We love them. I tease them just like Jesus would have, you know, and they would give me a hard time too for, you know, like having a green screen behind me. So that's the deal. So let's go back and finish up the little
the slides? Yeah. Do you want to go to the scriptures part here, or where do you want to take it?
Let's go to number six.
Number six.
Yeah, just take the middle, and I just want to finish this part. So basically, Jesus is 38, right? But if you go down there and you go to 100, this is actually where the birthplace of Christianity is in Turkey, Bulgaria, Macedon, Greece. This is the beginning of Christianity. We'll show you that map in a second during the Bible times, so you can compare what it looked like from today. But I wanted you to see the context of where all this stuff was happening. And I'll show you where the 12 churches of Revelation are too. We'll do that today, Rex, in a sec. So real quick. So the very first New Testament would be a gospel and some letters. You know, right, the very earliest that we have is Marcion. I want to make something clear that was in the questions that we had. We had a number of questions, and one of the questions was, I don't believe that Marcion was the first gospel. I believe it was Mark. I didn't say it was the first, like, gospel. I said it was the first New Testament, and I said it was the first gospel that got published, okay? In other words, it went out, whereas Marcion sources, there's two that we have seen from the computer research, very long. I'm going to ask you to take me on this. We'll do a cast on it one time. But basically, he had what was an early gospel of Mark, which was different than what Mark had in 200 AD. But you can see the differences as you look with the computer analysis, taking just phrases and sentences and matching them as to who had what when. And it's really fascinating. But skipping all that, Marcion basically, for whatever reason, in 144, this guy who was the head of a church there in Sinope, and also a couple others, but he was also spreading the word. He spread the gospels. He claims he was taught by the disciples of Paul. Okay, so that's what he said. And the church hated him, which means I trust him more already. So Marcion has this Bible, but it is based on not the book of Mark that you have, but the early books of Mark, the book of Mark, and the very early, what we would call the Q sayings. We showed you the book of Thomas the other day, where there's about 20 pages of sayings of Jesus, right? Okay, 50%, I'm going to make this number up, it's about half. Half of those sayings also appear in the Bible, in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, okay? Okay, so now we have Mark, who writes this story, pretty early, probably 70, 80, 90, or 100 AD. Pretty early. That's one generation away from Jesus, maybe, or two generations. Not very far. And, but, before that, people were talking about Jesus, okay? And this is the book of Thomas, his brother, who wrote about 20 pages of stuff that brother said. Now, is it just Thomas that wrote? I seriously doubt that. Was Thomas educated enough to write a book in Greek? I seriously doubt that. Okay. So probably, okay, the best story to make so you can make sense of it in your world is that people that were at the various events, because Thomas was not at all the events of life. He had to feed a family and take care of kids and change diapers and all this stuff like everybody else does. But people had stories, and he probably wrote down the sayings, just like Confucius had sayings. So he was one of the guys who wrote down all this stuff. And there was probably other guys, too. I've always speculated that Mark was one of the guys that did this, because Mary goes to the tomb, okay, at about 4 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, the day that as sunrise hasn't come up yet, but She looks in the tomb. There is no stone. That was added later. You can see from Mark, there is no stone. If you look in the notes, like this was not in the earliest manuscripts. But there's no stone. So Mary just looks into the tomb. And sure enough, there's a little young man in there. He's about 12, 14, 16 years old. Young man is, I can't actually think of the Greek word offhand. Wow. But because we all know the Greek word, the word for virgin, right? Virgin is a young girl. Well, this is basically the same thing, except for he's a boy. And has nothing to do with sex. It's their age. They're kids, okay? So there's this young man, and he's wearing linen, which is what Jesus was resting on in the tomb, all right? And I think that whoever this was, and I think it was Mark, because the only person it could possibly be, if you believe literally what happened here, like from Mark 1 until 16, verse 9, I think it is. If you just believe the story, he wrote the book. Who else? Mary Magdalene is the only person at the tomb. He wrote the book. He's inside. Who else could have known about this story? No one. Just Mary and Mark, right? And so I think that this is the Mark that actually wrote down what we call Q-source things. In other words, things that appear in Matthew and Luke, but not Mark. Okay, so there's all these additions. The story is almost exactly the same in parts because it comes from Mark. Just like our friend Marcion over in Turkey, he has the same thing. He's got the book of Mark, and he takes it with the Q source, his Q sources that he has, and basically he doesn't do a lot as far as storytelling. His gospel is a quarter the size of these other ones. But anyhow, it's there. You can read it. It's called, if you want, go online and look for Jason Bedouin's book, it's called The First New Testament. People should do that. Moving on, so Marcion was able to get this from port to port because he was a shipsman. He was in charge of the fleet, and probably for the Roman Empire, a big shot. 144, it's published. That means probably 25 people saw it in 25 different ecclesias and churches around Turkey. In 250 AD, the first copies of the four Gospels together were put together by what was now becoming the church fathers, like Irenaeus, Ignatius, Jerome, and all these guys. There was like 10 of these guys that were early, that were friends, that they talked to each other and wrote letters to each other and all that kind of stuff. So about 250, so 200 years after Jesus, somewhere around 200 to 300 AD, Acts of the Apostles is written. Why do I say that? Because the book of Acts looks exactly like Josephus's own work. It looks to me like whoever wrote the book of Acts is taking Josephus and says, hey, this is a good story. I think I'll use this one for our Bible. It was accurate. Josephus was accurate. He was a bit of an exaggerator. He worked for the Roman Empire. The guy was definitely trying to brown nose. Okay. But he was also Jewish and, in fact, an Essene. And he also had an ego so big that he wanted to tell as much as he possibly could, okay? And, of course, if you look at his book, it's like, you know, two copies of my books side to side. It's huge. It's massive. So here we are. But let's just say that Paul wrote it. Who knows? If he did, he wrote it between 200 and 300 because it doesn't exist before 200. All right, we don't have any copies, nothing about Acts before 200. And in fact, we have a book called instead, nobody knows about this, Acts of All the Apostles. Acts of All the Apostles, and you guys can look that up. That actually appeared around the same time period, around 200 AD. 325 to 450, things really start to collect in the Roman Empire now. The church forms, the Codex Sinaiticus is written, the Codex Vaticanus is written. These books are beautiful. They're codexes, and they're of the early manuscripts of how these how the church fathers wanted the Bible to read. And I'm tempted to go look, but I'm not going to do it. We're not going to do it yet. But this is how they wanted to read. The Book of Acts, for example, doesn't exist in the Codex Sinaiticus. It was not important enough to make it. If it existed, other books were in these huge documents that the church had at the beginning, and they are beautiful scripts. Like the Shepherd of Hermas is in the New Testament, like around Jesus' time, right? And the Epistle of Barnabas, who claimed they. Obviously not written at the time of Jesus, but, you know, at the same time of this Paul book, about 100, 120 AD, something like that. And Barnabas was claimed to be the, you know, traveling companion of Paul. So there you go. But why aren't they in our Bible today? It's always interesting why stuff that was in the original Bible that we would call the Catholic Bible, because that's what it was, why isn't it there today? Because over the years, they made about 30,000 changes that were significant. And I'm not talking about just punctuation because this really didn't exist, but I'm talking like changes, like making Mary into a prostitute, for example, things like that. And these changes reshaped the views so they could get rid of all of the non-Orthodox people and call them evil names like Gnostics or heretics or something like that, right? So finally, the end of the Christian era ends at the next two things, which is that around 1200, 1900, the dates vary, but there's a bunch of semi-complete, like 95% complete copies of the Bible, if you want to call the Bible that's been changed seven complete times from cover to cover up until 1200. And then all the changes that happened as it went to King James. And then after that, oh my gosh. And then Martin Luther takes out like 10 books that he doesn't like. He doesn't like Tobit. He doesn't like Esdras. He doesn't like Maccabees. I liked Martin Luther, but for crying out loud, dude, it was early. Like, who are you to take this out? You know, I did like the guy. He was smart, but leave it in. Like, we should have all these things in there. Like, let us all learn. Okay, and finally the Nestle almond. I'm sorry, which almost
would you like an almond bar?
I would like an almond bar. Although this is the final copy of the Bible, which by the way is not corrected. It's now in a library, and but we're still because we have early copies of manuscripts now that we didn't have after the Oxyrhynchus finds and the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Gnostic Gospels. We now have better data on what goes in the Bible. It's hard to make a bad Bible now because we have good data. We didn't have great data, you know, 75 years ago because we didn't have any of these other finds. But now we know really what was in the Bible. So that takes us out of there. So let's go look at, there's the third map down there. Look at number 9. Yeah. So right here, I think this is pretty cool. Is there a way to move to, yeah, thank you. So if we look down there by Jerusalem, let's go there first. Okay, Jerusalem is lower right-hand corner. And there we – yep, right there. So Jerusalem. So where does the church go after – because it's not in Jerusalem anymore. It's been destroyed. You know, the Romans came down. They destroyed everything. If there was a church building, which seems unlikely to me, but I don't lean I would say there wasn't. But if there was – it's gone. And the synagogues, gone. And everything that was a building, gone. Okay? So everything is taken out of that little green box down there around Jerusalem. The matchbox is always an easy target for everybody. And so they basically cleaned out the matchbox. All of the conservative Jews, for sure, are gone. They didn't do anything to Tiberias or to Sepphoris or to Caesarea, the Romans, that is. Those cities continued to stand. But basically, if there were Jews there, they were dead and they were gone. So where does the church go? Because it's not in Jerusalem anymore, and it's certainly not in Rome. They didn't want anything to do with it up there at the time. At the time, if you look at Italy, at Rome in the upper left-hand corner up there, this is still quite a ways away. Paul apparently, legend has it that he went there one time. There's actually no evidence that shows this whatsoever. But let's just say that he did. If he did, that's at the end of this period that would have been around 125 AD because Christians were still semi-persecuted. It was kind of like this. For about 100 years, people that were Jews were Christians, okay? Like they're the same thing. Christians that believed in a Messiah were Jews. There wasn't any real difference. As time went on, maybe after the war, 80, about 100, all of a sudden people started to believe in Jesus and this guy as more of a Messiah, as somebody who was a prophet. Jesus called himself a prophet. Okay. His followers, Jesus said, "Who do they say that I am?" And his followers said, "They say you're the prophet, Elijah." They thought he was Elijah reincarnated. By the way, that makes for a great show too, because if you ever look at the end of all of the Gospels, no, that's not true. At the end of John and one of the synoptics, I don't know which one it is, but I'm going to say it's Luke. It sounds like Luke. So at the end of Luke and John, you have Jesus on the cross and he cries out this phrase and it's very dramatic. And he says, "Eli, Eli, sabachthani, my God, why have you forsaken me?" You know the name El, right? And so that's what it means. Why have you forgotten me? You know, like, and so Jesus, instead of going, "I'm so amazing because I'm up here saving the world," he was sad. He was bummed out, man. And this sucked for him. And so, and he says, "Eloi," by the way, that's at the cross that day. This is the second time Elijah's mentioned in this context where, oh, the centurions, which in Jerusalem, there were no centurions at this time, but we're going to give it to him anyway. So it says the centurion says, "Oh, he's crying out for Elijah. Why doesn't he have them come and fall off the cross? He'll be fine." Okay. Which is really interesting. So people thought he was Elijah. Okay. They thought he was Elijah. I think that's fascinating because that's what people also thought John the Baptist was. In other words,
real quick, check us out over on Patreon. Why? because I have hundreds of hours of exclusive content, ad-free, uncensored, unedited, stuff that we can only talk about on Patreon, beyond the cutting edge, and you'll get access to it for only a buck a month. And if there's an interview that you want me to do, a guest that you want me to get on the show, or a topic that you want me to discuss, if you leave a comment over on Patreon, I'll do my best to get that guest on the podcast or that subject. And I'll even do my best to get back to you here on YouTube. And your contributions greatly help Leak Project. So check us out over on Patreon, and please subscribe to our YouTube channel here and hit the bell for all notifications, and check back daily for new podcasts, because we upload podcasts pretty much every single day. And has anyone told you today that you're awesome? Because you are.